All right, let's close the eyes. Sit up comfortably tall so you can try to keep the spine up, but very comfortable and relaxed. Let's recite Om three times. Inhale. Okay, let's open the eyes. All right, so again, before we start, we always do this invocation, right, to Sage Patanjali. So you can either close the eyes and listen in, or just read it on the screen. Yogen chittasya padena vacha malam sharirasya cha vaidyakena yopakarotam pravaram muninam patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi. Joyce, you want to read the English translation?
I respectfully bow down with folded hands and offer my salutations to, is it Sage
Patanjali?
Thank you. The highest among the
Munis,
who has presented the remedies for removing the impurities of the body through his treatise on
Ayurveda.
Thank you. Of language through its treatise on grammar,
Mahabhashya,
and the impurities of the chitta mind field through his treatise on yoga.
Yoga Sutras.
Thank you.
Okay, so this is just an invocation to Sage Patanjali, who is the author of Yoga Sutras, and he's also credited with two other super sciences that he gave us, the medicine called Ayurveda and grammar called Mahabhashya. So he, you know, we have three things that we want to purify, the mind, body, and speech, and he gave us the science for all three, basically. That's why he's such a super guy. This is an ongoing series of talks. And like Kalpana said, we resumed this discussion. You know, we went through the whole cycle of Yoga Sutras, which took us about, if I remember right, about 18, 20 months, about a year and a half. And then we are recycling now again. And we restarted only about two or three sessions ago. I forget now. Just very recently. So we're going through sutra by sutra, okay. Again, for your benefit, you know, this Yoga Sutras is a text which is quite ancient. Some say 2,500 years ago, some say even older. And it has four chapters, so to say, 195 statements. They are called sutras. Each statement gets linked to the next statement nicely. Essentially, it's all about yoga. It's just to try and understand what yoga is all about, what we are all about, what our mind is all about, how the mind functions, why does it do things that it's doing, why are we stressed out, what do we want peace for, etc., etc., you know, all those. It's all about the mind, essentially. Like the invocation that you read, it said that to cleanse the impurities of the mind, yoga was given to us by Patanjali. So that's the whole purpose. And
I was up at the first building waiting for somebody.
Oh, I see. Oh. So you went to the 206 at the first building. Okay. Well, it's building number 4. That's okay. I'm glad you found us. And what's your name?
Ginger.
Ginger, yes.
Edwards.
I remember that name now. You're signing up. All right. So we've been going through these slides one sutra at a time. And does anybody remember where we finished off last time? What sutra number?
Yeah, 15.
15. So okay. Now, like I said, the whole Yoga Sutra is about the mind. And in the very beginning of the sutras, Patanjali defines what yoga is all about. And he says yoga is defined as the ability to calm the mind, calm whatever is the stuff that's going on in the mind. How do you calm that stuff? Because as the mind is agitated, it doesn't take the right decision, it's not calm, it's always messed up, basically. And yoga is to allow us to know how to calm that mind. That's the whole purpose of yoga. Okay, and then what it says is that there are all these fluctuations going on in the mind, and there are he broadly categorized them into 5 different categories. So we went over that last time. The different ways in which the mind gets distracted, disturbed, stuff gets into the mind. And finally, and the last thing that we were discussing was that there are 2 basic things that he wants us to do so we can eventually calm the mind. And those 2 things are, in Sanskrit, the names are, anybody remember? 2 things that we talked about last time?
I didn't come last time.
You didn't come last time.
So she doesn't know.
Only Dave was here, I think. No, Mahi was here.
I was here.
Hmm?
I was here.
Gail was here.
I know. I was here.
So what are the 2 things that we are talking about that he wants us to do?
Our mind, the chatter, the monkey.
Yeah, I know, but what are the 2 things specifically that he talked about that we went over last time and we're still going through that? Come on, jog your minds.
Yeah,
2 things, the sutras that we're talking about. You have your book in front, so.
No, well, I'm still looking.
What's number 15 about?
It's about mastery Vairagya. And consciousness, non-attachment, Vairagya.
Yes.
Craving.
So what are the 2 things?
Free from craving.
For non-attachment or Vairagya.
And the first thing was? That's number 2.
Jnana.
Read the previous one. 14, 13. Number 12. Read the number 12. Loud.
Abhyasa. Abhyasa. Vairagya abhyam. Anirodha.
And what's the English translation?
Abhyasa is practice. Vairagya is
non-attachment. The translation of the sutra itself. What's the translation?
I'm going to read from the book.
Yeah, that's
these
right.
These mental modifications are restrained by practice and non-attachment.
All right. Do you want to read it again, Gail, the translation?
These mental modifications are restrained by practice and non-attachment.
Okay. So now everyone knows what we're talking about. What are the two things we're talking about?
Practice
and non-attachment. These modifications of the mind, that's what we said. Our job is to calm the mind so that we don't have all these constant changes, all this churning that's going on in the mind constantly. We want to subdue that, all that. And to do that, he says in number 12, that you can do that by abhyasa, which is constant practice, and vairagya, which is
non-attachment.
We said it could be either non-attachment or detachment, and we kind of understood the difference between the two. Does everyone recognize the difference between detachment and non-attachment? No? If I'm already attached to my cup of coffee 7 in the morning, I'm deeply attached. If I don't get it, I get a headache. Mm-hmm. I cannot go to the toilet and things like that. That's attachment. I am already attached. But that's causing problems because if I miss my coffee, I'm a miserable mess. I want to get detached from it. See? That's detachment.
Okay.
Now, there is a certain, let's say, style of cake somebody presented at a party, and you kind of liked it, right? But now you know that if I get attached to it, I'm going to be a miserable mess again. So I don't want to attach myself to it. I like it, it's okay, but I don't want to get attached to it. That's non-attachment. So the difference is, if you're already attached, then you have to detach yourself, pull yourself away. But if you're not attached, you want to take the steps so you don't get attached.
Enjoy, but don't get attached.
Enjoy it. There's nothing wrong with enjoying food. There's nothing wrong with anything. Enjoy anything in life. I mean, that's what life is for, enjoyment. Attachment is the problem.
Yeah.
That's when you get attached to something, it doesn't matter what it is. Any kind of attachment is a major problem.
So by practice, he means practice of doing meditation?
That's practice of doing yoga. Practice of doing the 8 limbs of yoga. There are 8 limbs of yoga which he specifies, and we're going to get into that today. That's one of the tasks we are getting into. But practice, remember, there are 3 characteristics of the practice that we talked about. Anybody remember that? 3 characteristics of practice, abhyasa.
Do it a long time.
Long time.
Continuously.
Continuously.
And with earnestness.
With deep earnestness. So you do it for a long time, dirgha kala. How long did we say?
Forever.
What is forever? What does forever mean?
You can't do that until you have no more attachment to it.
And how long does it take in general?
Lifetimes.
Lifetimes. It's not one lifetime. Patanjali says that calming the mind is a very difficult task. It cannot happen in one lifetime. It will not. So you are talking of multiple lifetimes to attain that goal of calming the mind. But he also tells us that, you know, you don't ever start with a clean slate every lifetime. You know, you carry your bag, whatever you do in this life. So if you're doing a lot of yoga in this life, that will be carried with you and you start from that spot. Whatever is your level of awareness, your consciousness level, you will carry that with you in your bag of karma. It's called the karma bag. Anybody heard the term karma? So you're carrying that karma bag with you, and because of that bag, you're starting at that same level that you finished off at. But it will take a lot of time. Okay, but then you have to keep going. But if you miss something, then you'll drop down. If you miss a day or miss a week, then you drop down. Okay, then you probably drop down more than a week's worth. So you cannot afford to miss any time. That's what it is, continuous, without any breaks. So it is dirghakala nairantarya. Nairantarya means without any interruption, any gaps. And then the third one was in earnestness, with a sense of devotion, with faith, with trust, with a sense of admiration to test what you're doing. And that Sanskrit phrase for that was satkar asevitaha. Satkar asevitaha. So that was the definition of abhyasa that we went through last time. Okay. And what's the definition of vairagya? We went through in number 15. What's the definition here?
Non-attachment.
Yeah. So, what's the definition here? Can somebody read that loud? We went through this last time.
Detachment, vairagya, is the consciousness of perfect mastery in one who has ceased to crave for objects seen or unseen.
So, craving for objects seen or unseen. If you recall, we said seen doesn't just mean seen through the eyes. It implies all the five senses. In most of our literature, in fact, in all literature, you will see that the word used is drishta. Drishta is literally, it means seen. But in general, drishta means observed through the five senses. It includes all the five senses. So all the objects that we are attracted to through our five senses, those are the objects that we get attached to. So our mastery to remain unattached to the objects of the five senses, that's called vairagya. Okay? But then anushravika, he adds another word here, which is not necessarily observed through the five senses, but which has been told to us through some scriptures maybe. Maybe there is a scripture which says, if you do this, you will go to heaven. Or if you do this, you will fly in the air. If you do this, you will walk on water. Things like that. You know, there are statements made like this in the Yoga Sutras itself. Okay? Now, those are not the things that you are perceiving through the five senses, but somebody told you that these are the attainments you can get. But you don't want to get attached to those either. That's a big no-no.
That's just fluff.
It's all fluff. It may happen. It may happen when you practice yoga, but if you get attached to it, it's a downfall. Your level of consciousness will drop. Psh, plummet down. You'll never attain enlightenment.
Yeah, get stuck flying around.
See? So that's the vairagya that we talked about last time. This is all we completed last time. Perceptible objects of attraction may include persons of opposite sex, food, drink, music, etc. Imperceptible may include heaven, achievement of siddhis, that's what I just mentioned. Okay, so this is considered the lower form of vairagya or the lower stage of vairagya. Okay. So when I started reading the Yoga Sutras, when I saw that, you know, that this is only the lower stage of vairagya, I said, oh my God, what do I have to do? Because he is defining another stage, higher state than this.
Then what?
Then this vairagya. This vairagya, which includes non-attachment to objects of the five senses, and even heaven and all that, he calls it the lower state. That's what I'm saying. I was shocked to read that when I saw it the first time. Because for me, this itself is a huge challenge. Even to get to the state where I'm not attracted to the or attached to the five senses. I mean, I'm so attached to my food, you know. It's impossible to get rid of that. I must have this food, I must have this food at such and such time, you know. And I'm trying to get rid of all that, but it's so hard. It's just so hard to get rid of that. And food is just one of the things, you know. There are so many other things.
I mean, our body requires some things, and so we automatically do get attached to it. I mean, it's a physical need, right?
Right, sure.
For example, when you say food, like it's a need.
Yeah, and no. You need the you. What I mean by attachment is you understand the concept, right?
Yeah.
If you need food, go eat it. perfect.
Yeah.
You will need that. But to be attached to a certain type of food, you absolutely must have this for lunch, otherwise I'm going to die, otherwise I'm going to get sick. That's the kind of attachment we're talking to.
It's like the cake you liked, but you know, you enjoy it, but if you just crave for it all the time, then
that's attachment.
It's a different level.
That's attachment. Right? You may enjoy a cup of coffee, it's okay, but let's say one day you're traveling and you don't get your cup of coffee. Are you going to be miserable? That's the point. So enjoying life is fine. I mean, that's the whole purpose of life, I think, you know. If you don't have fun in life, what's the point? But the whole point is attachment makes you lose that fun. Okay? So now, the next one is what we're going to start with today. So we'll do the Sanskrit first. Tat param purusha khyatehe guna vaitrishnyam. Okay, let's do it one more time. Tat param purusha khyatehe guna vaitrishnyam. That's one word, unfortunately. Vaitrishnyam. It's a little complicated word, but it's one word. So what does it mean? Tatpara means higher than that. Higher than the one that was mentioned previously. Higher than that. What's higher than that? The ability to know about Purusha. Purusha khyati means knowledge about Purusha. Now what is Purusha? Remember we talked about Purusha and Prakriti one time? What's Purusha?
Consciousness.
Consciousness. Self, consciousness. Okay, and what's the opposite of that?
Prakriti.
What's that?
Material objects.
All the matter.
Everything else.
Everything that's matter, including our whole body, mind, intellect, this whole material universe, everything. That's called the Prakriti. Okay? Now, the whole object of yoga is to understand that my true identity is nothing but this pure consciousness called Purusha. That's the objective of yoga. Okay? When you get close to that realization, self-realization is that what we call it, right? Self-realization. That's, you must have heard that term, self-realization. That's what it means. You realize that you're nothing but this pure consciousness. Now, when you get to that point through guna vaitrishnyam. Guna means what? Does everyone know what gunas are?
Qualities.
What are these? Which ones are we talking about? Yes, sattva, rajas, and tamas. Those are the three gunas. Now, what are these three gunas? Everyone remember that? They are the qualities of nature. Nature is prakriti. Prakriti is a composite of these three gunas. Sattva, rajas, and tamas. What is sattva? Purity. Sattva is purity, cleanliness, purity, goodness, you know, you can call it. Everything that's positive, that's good, that's uplifting, that's encouraging, etc., etc. That's all sattva. What is rajas?
Action.
Action, movement, gung-ho, type A personality, you know, go-getter, that kind of attitude. That's all under the rajas. Ambition, I want to be the CEO, I'm no good if I don't come first, and that thing, right? You understand that. There's no place for also ran in that category. So that's rajas. What's tamas?
Laziness.
dullness, laziness, sleepiness, couch potato-ness, you know, anything. And then, of course, all the negative tendencies like desire to hurt, kill, steal, you know, all they fall under that joint category of tamas and rajas. The attitude itself is tamas, and the desire to do that, to hurt somebody, that's rajas. Do you get the idea? Right? The attitude itself that I want to hurt this person, that's tamas. And then when you actually start planning it, how do you want to do that? By hitting somebody, or shooting somebody, or whatever. That's all rajas then. You know, that's a combination of that. So there's sattva, rajas, and tamas. Those are the three gunas. They are the, gunas are the reason why we act, do anything. Whether it's sattva-based, whether it's rajas-based or tamas-based, all our actions are based on gunas. All our thoughts, all our behavior patterns, everything that we do, think, plan, it's all based on a certain combination of these gunas. Okay. Now, what we have been seeing is that initially our interest is in diminishing the influence of rajas and tamas so that the sattva guna, the one that is purity, etc., that is more dominant. We need all three at all times. Let me not misguide you. We need all three at all times. Okay, if you don't have tamas, you will never get to sleep at night. You need that. If you don't have rajas, you will never get to work on time. You need that. The point is, it's the dominance of these two which starts causing problems. And so our interest is to shift the dominance of these gunas from rajas and tamas to sattva. But eventually even sattva, attachment to sattva itself is a problem then. So what they're telling us is that you want to go beyond all the three gunas. Eventually you want to transcend any attachment or any influence of any of these three gunas. And that is possible only when you have gone and merged back to the original prakriti, which is called, in technical terms, it's called unmanifest prakriti. When there is no manifestation, there is no intellect, there is no nothing at that point. Or at least the semblance is not there. So, that is the state that we want to attain. Vaitrishnya means completely no desire for any of these three gunas then. Vaitrishnya. Trishna is thirst or desire. Vaitrishnya means no desire, no thirst for any of these three gunas. And we have been able to transcend the influence of all these three gunas. Once we get there, you are fully liberated. You are fully enlightened. You are self-realized. And that is the highest form of non-attachment or detachment. It's actually non-attachment at that point. Because then you are fully detached anyway. You have been able to detach yourself from everything that you were attached to, and now it is final non-attachment. And that is the state that he is calling the para, you know, this, he doesn't give the term, but most people like to call it para vairagya. Okay, all the commentators, they call it, that's this term used in other literature. So there is the vairagya, apara vairagya, which is the lower form, and para vairagya, which is the highest form of vairagya or this non-attachment that we're talking about. Get that idea? So this is the final non-attachment that we are striving to get to, which will help us realize our true self, and then we will be I will know myself to be self-realized. Once you're self-realized, nobody else should know that. You know, there's no reason, because you're not telling anybody anything. You have no ego at that point. You have no reason to say, oh, I'm self-realized. Hey, 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 hey. That doesn't happen. You never hear anybody say that, I'm self-realized.
Well, you have heard, I have heard people say that, but I know they
weren't. Because I said it.
Yes. The moment you say that, you're not.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right?
I have a friend who's
because then that's ego speaking. Mm-hmm. And the moment you allow the ego to raise its head, you've already gone down, gone back. Okay, so that's the final stages of samadhi. And in this position, complete discriminative power has been attained. That's the viveka part. Okay, viveka. Viveka is the pure discriminatory wisdom which will dawn on us. And then the gunas have merged back to their unmanifest form called the prakriti. Okay, at this point, what I have done is I am now skipping through a large number of sutras because I'm not going in sequence, as I mentioned. I've kind of done this based on my own liking as to, you know, where are these groups of sutras which make more sense to go together. And then we'll come back to these later.
I had a question in that 116. So at a higher level, does it mean that it's suggesting, I mean, to be non-judgmental and be with the nature without even judging the nature of the person?
Yeah. Like, judgment is a part of the ego.
Okay.
Judgment is an ego function.
Okay.
And we're talking of no function of the ego here. Ego has a role to play,
okay.
But that's not judgment. That's just to assign identification. The only role that ego plays is it identifies what my role is. It will tell me that I'm a father at this time, or I'm a student, I'm a mother, I'm a president of this company at this time. And then it transfers the responsibility to the intellect to apply the appropriate action. Ego does not determine any action. Judgment means you have already decided on what you want to do or what you have to do. That's negative.
So that means like it suggests to kind of let it go naturally.
Yes.
Not
yes.
Be even aware of the variations of the gunas.
No. Awareness is not a problem.
Okay.
It's not a problem. Gunas, as long as gunas are there, they will be fluctuating. The only thing that we can attempt to do is to minimize the fluctuations such that the dominance of rajas and tamas is diminished. That's the only thing. And that happens through a lot of practice, a lot of yoga practice, a lot of meditation and all that.
But we do that without passion.
What do you mean by passion?
It suggested some dispassion in the 116.
Yeah, dispassion is non-attachment, basically. That's what the word means here. Yes.
Not even controlling, let it happen naturally.
Controlling what?
The gunas, like...
Yeah, let them happen by themselves.
Okay.
You're right,
just
yes.
Watch them.
Just watch them, yeah.
Okay.
True. Okay. Now, there are several sutras that I'm skipping, and many of them have to do with the concept of Ishvara, God, and I like to do that much later when I do the eight limbs of yoga. I like to combine that with that whole discussion. So that's what we will do. So I'm going to skip a lot of these sutras now. Okay. And this is just one of the sutras which kind of lists all the obstacles that are likely to befall us on our path to realization. Okay. On our yoga practice, basically. So, these are the listed obstacles. So, let's read the Sanskrit. There are a large number of them, nine of them. Vyadhi, Styana, Sanshaya, Pramad, Alasya, Avirati, Bhranti Darshana, Alabdha Bhumikatva, Anavasthitatvani. Okay, so it's a long list of 9 obstacles that can cause us to divert us from our path to yoga, in a sense. Okay? So, Gail, you want to read the English translation below?
Sure. Disease, dullness, doubt, carelessness, laziness, sensuality, false perception, failure to reach firm ground, and slipping from ground gained, these distractions of the mind stuff are the obstacles.
Right. I think most of you understand these terms. Disease could be physical or mental. Dullness. Actually, sthyana, not sure why it is translated dullness. It more means, to me, it means carelessness, not dull. I don't know. For me, sthyana means carelessness. You know, you don't pay attention, don't pay care, take care, and you're not concerned about detail. You just let things go. Ah, it's okay, you know. It's mindlessness, you know, basically. That's dhyana. Doubt, even when you're not sure what's happening and you're always doubtful, always doubting. And then carelessness, oh, there is carelessness. Pramada.
I think disease is tough.
Maybe dhyana means indifference?
Indifference is something, yeah, somewhat close here. And dullness is okay. It's dhyana.
When you have a lot of pain, it's very difficult to meditate.
Yes. With any of these. If you have any one of these, it's very difficult to meditate. That's the whole point. That's what they're saying. Any one of these 9 is an obstacle to your meditation practice. Okay. Laziness, sensuality, avirati is all the attractions to the 5 senses. That's avirati. False perception, bhranti darshana, when you're not sure what's going on, etc. So I don't want to go through the list completely. I mean, I have a line on each one of these. Maybe we should just read it one by one. What do you say? We'll start from one side. You can read first line and then Gail can.
Disease.
Vyadhi.
Physical illness or disease is an obvious distraction for the mind.
I would include even mental illness, you know.
It's really tough.
Okay, next one, Gail.
Dullness, satna.
Sthyana.
Chronic fatigue and lack of nervous energy are caused either by some defect in the
pranamaya kosha.
Or the psychological condition based on a total lack of purpose in life.
Does everyone know what pranamaya kosha is? Does everyone know what a kosha is? You've heard the term kosha?
Chamber.
Yeah, no. And
one of the 5 sheaths.
5 sheaths. What are the 5 sheaths? So there in yoga we call them 5 sheaths, 5 koshas. What are the 5 koshas? Annamaya kosha. Annamaya is the physical body, physical sheath, which is the physical touch and feel, bones, muscles, limbs, and all these things. This is all physical stuff. Next is the pranamaya kosha. That's the one that's mentioned here. Prana is the vital life energy. So that's the kosha sustained by breath. All the things like physiological functions, all the fluid motion, all the blood circulation, all the digestion, assimilation of food, assimilation of nutrients, eliminations, incoming, outgoing stuff from the body, you know, blinking of the eyes, burping, eliminate everything. That's all a part of the pranamaya kosha. Next one is the manomaya kosha. Man is the mind, so it's the mental stuff. Now this is where all the problems are, all the manomaya kosha. Okay, where all these vrittis happen, where all the changes and fluctuations happen, where all the desires, anxieties, everything, guilt feelings, all that is happening. That's all the mind stuff. Then next is the vijnanamaya kosha, which is the more deeper stuff connected to the intuition. Okay, that's the more of the intuitive wisdom or the intellect, which is more directed towards the pure soul, so to say. That's the Vijnanamaya Kosha. And finally, the last one is the Anandamaya Kosha. Ananda is the state of total bliss where you are. Now, you have been able to transcend all the other koshas and you are able to stay blissful irrespective of what situation in life you are in.
That comes and goes, though.
Yes, but we want it to come more than go.
Yeah, right.
Eventually. Eventually you want to be able to stay in that.
Although in a blissful state, it's hard sometimes to function in a blissful state.
Depends, you know.
You're so happy. I mean, just, you know, it's almost you're clouded by your happiness.
Well, if it's clouded by happiness, then it's ego.
Yeah.
And we don't want to do that. It should be a natural state of, instead of calling it happiness, I prefer to call it joy. It's a slight difference, you know. We associate happiness with things,
yeah.
You know, whereas joy is inborn. So it's the ultimate state of inner joy. And that will guide you to do more effective work rather than sitting and doing nothing. That's laziness. Okay. All right. So what's next? Doubt? Somebody want to?
Doubt, samshaya. Doubts in the efficacy of yogic techniques are a cause of distraction. An unshakable faith, shraddha, in the objectives, in the person himself, and the yogic methods to be practiced is a key requirement for progress on the path of yoga.
Anything that comes to mind here? This is only focusing on wherever I took it from. He was focusing only on the yogic path, but it applies to everything else in life.
Yeah. If you don't have faith in what you're doing, you're not going to succeed.
Succeed, yes. Right. Okay, next.
Carelessness or pramada?
Pramada.
Pramada. Pramada.
Pramada.
Pramada.
Yeah. Yes.
Careful attention to important and seemingly unimportant things in life is needed to overcome the tendency to become lax and careless in yogic pursuits.
I think we understand that, right? Very careful attention. Everything that we do, I mean, even if you're practicing asanas, if you're not doing it carefully, you can either get hurt or you may not do it effectively at all. So careful attention is very essential to whatever you're doing, whether you're doing asana, pranayama, or meditation, any of those.
I think the interesting thing is also to pay attention to unimportant things in life.
Very seemingly unimportant.
Yeah.
That's very important to understand. Seemingly unimportant. We from our perspective, they may not be, but they eventually might turn out to be very important. So rather than taking a chance, just pay attention to everything in life.
Mindfulness.
So mindfulness. You're talking
mindfulness. Absolutely. That's a perfect term. These days, mindfulness is the term used. That's very good.
Be aware of everything you're doing all the time.
Yes.
Watch yourself do everything all the time.
Yes. Watch yourself. That's it. Just watch. Be very, very alert and watchful. Okay, next.
Laziness?
Yeah. Yeah.
Laziness is love, comfort, and ease, and a tendency to avoid exertion, physical or mental. Languor, mentioned above, can be considered a physical defect, while laziness is a psychological condition.
That's one way of looking at it. Okay. Avirati.
The path of yoga leads to Viveka.
Viveka.
Viveka. Discrimination. However, if this viveka purely is purely at an intellectual level, the mind will be constantly driven outward through the attraction of sense objects. World-mindedness can be a serious cause of
vikshepa.
Vikshepa, mental distraction.
Yeah, no, there's, you know, I haven't used the diacritical marks for these Sanskrit words, so it's hard to pronounce them unless you have the diacritical marks. Okay, next. Ginger.
I have a hard time reading.
Oh, then no, don't worry. Kalpana.
Delusion. Bhranti darshana. Delusion, taking a thing for what it is not, is generally caused by a lack of discrimination. Sometimes people begin to see lights or hear sounds during their yogic sadhana. Due to delusion, they begin to look at these spurious and trivial experiences as real yogic attainments. These feelings are a serious cause of distraction.
Bhranti darshana. Then alabdha bhumikatva. You can keep going.
Non-achievement of a state. I'll never get the next one right.
don't worry. Alabdha bhumikatva.
To attain deeper levels of consciousness, one needs to go through the essential techniques of yoga.
Dharana.
Concentration.
Dhyana.
Meditation.
Samadhi.
Absorption. Persistent effort is required to make the leap from one state to the next. Non-attainment of the next state with reasonable effort is a major cause of distraction for the
sadhaka. Sadhaka is the person who is
practitioner
of yoga, pursuant, who is pursuing the goal of yoga. He's called a sadhaka in Sanskrit. That's a term you will see written many places. You know, they just assume that you know that word.
But that is a tough one. I mean, because if you're just doing your practice and you feel like you're not getting anywhere, it's a real bummer.
Is there any difference between abhyasa and sadhaka, like any intendance or any variation between these?
No. Sadhaka is doing abhyasa.
Okay.
It's the sadhaka who is doing the abhyasa.
Okay.
What do you mean difference?
Like in Tamil they use the word sadhakam for same like practice abhyasa, the same.
No. This is sadhaka, the one who is practicing.
Okay.
That's sadhaka in Sanskrit. Okay, and what is he practicing? He's doing his abhyasa of the yoga practices.
So, recommendation, just keep going, right?
Well, what you are alluding to is a sense of expectation. Mm-hmm. Okay, and expectation is always assigned to the ego. So the ego says that if I practice for a month, I should at least have 2 seconds of quiet time. All right? If I don't get to that state in a month's time, I am a failure in meditation. All that is being done by the ego. And if you are driven by the ego, there can be no achievement of anything. Zero. So first thing is to recognize who is setting that goal of getting 2 seconds of quiet time. Okay, and then who's doing the expectation of determining, and who's determining that I'm getting nowhere? Is it the ego or is it the intellect? If it's the ego, you don't want to follow that guideline. If it's the intellect, then intellect will also tell you what you should do, what you should modify to attain something. But then there is no feeling of disappointment at all. The intellect is not disappointed. It just knows how to make changes if needed. So there is no disappointment associated with the practice. Right? There is no judgment, there is no expectation associated with the practice. All right. All you want to do is to sit and meditate. That's it.
So does potentially you mentioned how to keep yourself motivated? Because honestly, I think that's the struggle.
Motivation is
to get into that practice.
He's telling you that, look, It's not an easy task. Okay? He's telling you that it's going to take multiple lifetimes. Now, you're expecting to do it in a month. All right? He's saying that it's going to take multiple lifetimes. So where's the question of judgment? Where's the question of expectation? If something that is supposed to take multiple lifetimes, how can we even say that, okay, I'm not achieving anything? Because not known to us, things are happening in the mind when we sit for meditation. It's doing a lot of subtle changes in our psyche, in our subtle structure of the brain, of the mind. Remember, we have all these samskaras, all these past impressions that we're trying to work with or deal with. And all that is happening at a very, very subtle level. We don't know that. And therefore, there is no question of judgment as to we are getting nowhere. And that statement eventually will evaporate once you start understanding that things are happening already inside the mind at a deeper level without our knowledge. And when you start practicing meditation, few things start happening fairly regularly. You know, one is that you might feel that you are a little calmer person now. You don't get agitated as much. You don't get aggravated as much. You don't get angry at people. You are at a little more peace. There is clarity of thinking that comes. Your decision making is a little bit better. All these things start happening slowly. Now, does that mean that your meditation is no good because you didn't get those 3 seconds of silence? Think for yourself.
You're saying that if we do meditation this lifetime and then when we're born the next life, we carry where we stopped off and we start from there. But then we also carry the samskaras from the previous life, that bag.
That's the samskara.
Oh, okay.
That samskara we are carrying now, that samskara has already modified.
Okay.
And that samskara says, you know, that we have attained a certain level of consciousness. That's where we start from.
Okay.
What's that?
Sounds encouraging.
Now, you had a question? Or
I was asking, in the Yoga Sutras, has Patanjali given any tips to keep oneself motivated to do the practice? At least for me, from the last time that I attended the meditation class, right? I've been keeping with it, but at times I'm not able to. When I'm not able to, the very least what I'm doing is I just chant that Surya Namaskara mantras, and then I'm done for today.
That's okay.
I think I very briefly spoke to you, and then I keep thinking about it. How do I really keep myself more motivated to do this? I have in my intellect, I want to do, but then there are lots of other things coming your way.
It's a slow, iterative process. That motivation is like I said, it comes and goes, but the more you start practicing, the more benefits you realize, at least some subtle benefits, and then you get more motivated. You know, if the goal is to calm the mind, and if your mind is not calm, that should be enough motivation eventually. You know, during the day we have just so much going on in the mind, so much stuff. Constantly churning thoughts, we're constantly aggravated, we were shouting at kids, you know, and then things happen, right? That should be motivation. Look, I want to get rid of all that.
Sometimes then I get stressed out that I didn't do my meditation for today. Right? So then I think that's not...
You know what I do is I make sure the first thing I do in the morning, after I brush my teeth and wash my face, that's what I do. I do meditation. And what I found out, sometimes I would be running late, so now I set my alarm even earlier to get up just to meditate. So I make sure that if I have to do something even earlier than I normally have to do, then I set my alarm earlier just to make sure that I get that in. Because if I do something, I start, it's over. You know, once I get out into the kitchen, it's over. You know?
Yeah. That's very true.
You don't get your time for it.
Yeah, I lose it, so I just have to do it right away.
You know, depending on what you have to do, set the alarm accordingly. That's it.
So is it good to have attachment towards meditation?
That's again, no, that's a very good point. Again, don't be attached to that meditation. What that means is, let's say one day, you, despite your best effort, you miss the meditation. It's okay.
Don't beat yourself.
Don't beat yourself up just because you didn't meditate today. That's attachment to meditation, and that's not what we want.
And don't judge the quality of it either.
Yeah, no, no, that.
Bad meditation.
That's all right. You want that 1 second. Isn't that funny? 1 second will do it sometimes.
Well, that's the 1 second is that aha moment, you know, which you really enjoy that.
I know. It's like, you know, wow, 1 second, then it's gone. It's like, wow, all this for 1 second.
That's such a beautiful second, though.
Oh, yes.
Because I always think about when we attended the class, so you were asking for the framework for different folks. I think I was one of those that picked the least time that we can allocate, which was like 45 minutes. Honestly, I have not been able to really spend that, you know, 45 minutes every day. I struggle with that. So I know I'm going to come back to the meditation intensive class.
Well, starting Monday.
Yeah, starting Monday. Yeah. So, again, to reinforce that for myself. But that 45 minutes every day, I'm not getting. So, if you can...
It's okay.
If we can tweak that, just as this 1 second, right? So, sometimes it's just 15 minutes, or sometimes it's just 5 minutes.
Sure, that's perfectly okay.
That's okay.
That's all right.
Yeah, that's
better. Yeah, 5 minutes is okay.
And then I keep thinking, oh, he said 45 minutes. If you really have to get to that stage, you have to do all these, the preparation to get there. I'm not able to do the preparation. I sometimes just do a sense salutation, and then I sit quiet, and that's it.
That's perfectly okay. Don't worry about it. You know, those are guidelines. You know, that 45 minutes is the guideline. If you cannot get 45 minutes, 30 minutes, 15 minutes, it's okay. You always said that, right? So, but getting, you know, some practice every day is more important than waiting for that beautiful sunny morning when you can do it full hour and a half or full 1 hour, you know. Some practice will help you train your mind, help you condition the mind properly. And then you just want, you know, you want to chip into those samskaras all the time. And meditation is the one which is doing that for us.
It's cumulative, too.
Hmm?
It's cumulative. So 5 minutes a day is better than just
zero.
1 hour on the weekend.
Right, it is. It is. It is. Okay. Okay, let's go to the next one.
Is it me? Oh,
yeah.
Yes. Okay. Instability. Sometimes, due to its inherent fickleness or unsteadiness, the mind can revert back to the previous state. This is a cause for...
Vikshepa, distraction.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Where I think I am.
I think you sort of explained it. That your ego... That your ego is the one that's making you upset about it.
Yes, yes.
I don't know, I think that's...
So, those were the 9 obstacles listed. And then, these are the other accompanying obstacles. They always accompany those 9. Okay? So, they are dukkha, Daurmanasya Angamejayatva Shvasa Prashvasaha Vikshepa Sahabhuvaha. So let me do that one more time. Dukkha Daurmanasya Angamejayatva Shvasa Prashvasaha Vikshepa Sahabhuvaha. Okay. Scott, you want to read the meaning in English at the bottom?
A
Accompaniments to the mental distractions include distress, despair, trembling of the body, and disturbed breathing.
These are just listed as accompaniments to all those nine. When those things happen, some of these will happen along with that. They might happen. Okay? And they are additional impediments to the practice of yoga, to the attainment of your goals of yoga, just to the practice itself. Okay? Like you said, if you have sickness, you can't sit and meditate. If you have laziness, you can't sit and meditate. Sometimes it happens, you know. It happens to me also many times. I start sitting and trying to meditate. I feel lazy. What I found the best that works is do shavasana for 5 minutes that time. You sit and meditate, kind of feel lazy. You know, I don't feel like sitting for too long today. Okay, it's all right. I just lie down on my back, shavasana 5-7 minutes. I get the energy back. I'm able to do that. It's all right. Works perfectly well.
Sometimes I do breathing exercises.
Yeah, that of course I do all the time. Breathing exercises before my meditation, that helps a lot. So, distress, despair, trembling of the body, and disturbed breathing, they are all distractions. Now, the dukkha, you know, dukkha is a word which has been used many places. Dukkha means suffering, pain. And in the Sankhya philosophy and other systems of yoga, they all tell us that dukkha is usually you can look at them as in three different categories, three different types of dukkha. Okay, what are these three? Yeah, read up. What are the three types of dukkha?
Sorrow, pain, and suffering.
Three types.
Adhyatmika.
So let's all, these are the three words you should read in Sanskrit, okay? Adhyatmika. Everyone repeat. Adhyatmika. Adhibhautika. Adhidaivika. So, adhyatmika, adhibhautika, adhidaivika. The reason I'm asking you to repeat these three, because you will see them mentioned almost in every literature that you eventually read on yoga. Okay? They'll mention everywhere. These are the three categories of dukkha or suffering. What is adhyatmika? Essentially, it means suffering that is self-created, so to say. It includes things like even running a fever or, you know, suffering because you're feeling guilty, suffering because you're anxious, suffering because you are stressed out. You know, all those things which are self-inflicted. All these are self-inflicted. Adhyatmika. Atmika means self. Adhyatmika means based on the self. So, those are the sufferings that are associated with the self, they are called adhyatmika. Adhibhautika are physical. Okay, adhibhautika are the physical. And they usually give examples if you're bitten by a snake or by a dog or something, or you're bothered by mosquitoes or bothered by some bugs, you know, or somebody hurts you physically, slaps you, kills you, or whatever, you know, shoots you. Those are the kind of things, adhibhautika. Okay.
Or mental inflictions by other two. They can play games with you.
That's also right. And what's adhidaivika? Daivika is all the divine natural disasters. All the tsunamis and earthquakes and floods and fires and plagues and, you know, all those things which you have no control over, but they happen and they are a cause of major, major suffering. And these are happening all the time, all everywhere. You know, fires in California and floods and tsunamis and earthquakes, etc., etc., everything. So those are the three different causes of suffering that are listed. And the job of yoga is eventually to get rid of all these three types of suffering. That means you should not bother whether any of these things happen or not. Can we stay calm despite these three kinds of suffering? That's the whole idea of yoga. So you have finally transcended these three types of suffering. Okay, so that's the dukkha part. And what is dharmanasya? Dejection or despair results from non-fulfillment of desires or non-removal of suffering. That's the dejection part. Dharmanasya. Dharmanasya means my mind is completely dejected. I've had enough, you know, that kind of feeling. I've had it.
Isn't that like sort of giving up? I mean, if somebody's yes. treating you poorly, you don't want to just give up and let them hurt you.
Right.
You have to develop some kind of something inside so they can't really hurt you.
Yes. You're right. What can you develop so that they cannot hurt you? Our mind. Because yes. mind is feeling hurt. So if the mind is strong, who's getting hurt? The ego. It's always the ego that gets hurt. So the whole purpose of yoga is to diminish the influence of the ego eventually.
But don't you have to do something to change the environment so you don't continue to get hurt?
Absolutely. But that's coming from the intellect, not the ego. Intellect knows what to do to change the environment so, you know, we don't get inflicted with those injuries that we are feeling now. So we should, you know, that's the intellect part. We want to change things around. Very true. And angamejayatva, shakiness of the body, trembling of the body, shivering, you're trembling. And obviously when you're doing that, you cannot sit and meditate when the body is shaking, trembling, etc. And then shwasa, disturbed breathing, that also happens when you have all those nine. They usually, if you're sick, for example, then your breathing is going to be very disturbed. And same thing with any of the other types of suffering. Okay? Okay. So then, you know, Patanjali has gone through several different types of meditation, etc., etc., and then eventually he discusses this, that any one object of meditation is good enough. So the sutra is tat. You want to repeat after me? Tat. Pratishedhartham ek tattva abhyasaha. Tat pratishedhartham ek tattva abhyasaha. So the practice of concentration on a single subject or the use of one technique is the best way to prevent obstacles and their accompaniments. So again, from wherever Patanjali goes, he goes towards meditation. Eventually he says, meditate. Eventually meditation is the key to eliminate all suffering, all kinds of mental distractions, etc., etc. And what do you meditate on? Eka tattva. Now he's not giving you any kind of specific concept for meditation. He says any object, any one single subject of meditation is good enough. You pick one and you're good to go. Okay, and the commentators, you know, when they talk about these one object, they say pick any of these 23 elements that we talked about. Remember we talked about 23 elements? No?
I don't. Sorry.
No?
Was it in the...
Somewhere we talked about it. 23 elements?
Yes.
We are a composite of 23 elements. I think these are some things that you have to kind of... memorize or solve more. It's not hard to memorize them. They're easy. Let me just go through them quickly and you will remember that. It's the intellect, ego, the mind. Those are the three subtle attributes. Then we have the five sense perceptions. Sense of smell, touch, taste, etc. Five sense perceptions. Then we have sense organs associated with each of the five sense perceptions. Organ of nose for the smell, skin for the touch, tongue for the speech, etc., etc. Everyone knows that. So five sense organs, five sense perceptions. Okay, that makes it 13, right? Intellect, ego, mind, five sense perceptions, five sense organs. Then we have five organs of action. Five organs of action. Hands and arms for lifting, throwing, that's one. Feet and legs, kicking, lifting, running, etc. That's number two. Then hurting somebody, organ of action. The most dangerous organ is the tongue. We hurt through the tongue mostly, quite badly. That's number three. And then the organs of elimination, number four, and organs of procreation, number five. So they are called the five organs of action. Karma Indriya in Sanskrit. Karma Indriya. Okay? Does anybody want to repeat those five organs of action?
Can you?
Who can repeat?
Hands and arms.
Hands and arms, that's number one.
Feet, legs.
Feet and legs, number two.
Mouth.
Tongue. Okay. Tongue is number three.
Reproduction.
Speech.
And elimination.
Production. Reproduction and elimination. Five. Okay, so five organs of action. So that makes it 18 so far. Five more left. Elements, five big elements. They're called the Mahabhutas. That's the earth, water, fire, air, and ether. They're called five Mahabhuta. Mahabhuta is the great elements. Okay. This topic of 23 elements comes up from time to time, so I don't mind repeating it every time, but I want you to kind of memorize that this is the stuff that we are composed of, these 23 elements. We are a composite of these 23 elements. Okay? And what the commentators say when they talk about this eka tattva abhyasa, that means concentrating on any one element, one object or one subject, pick any one of these 23 and you can use that as your point of focus.
Is there a sutra that covers the 23?
Not in the Yoga Sutras. But you will find that listed in some of the commentaries. Because they are a part of Sankhya philosophy. And Patanjali's yoga is based on Sankhya philosophy. You know, when they talk of the different stages of meditation, when they talk of meditating on gross objects, subtle objects, subtler objects and all that, that's when they start talking of these 23 elements. Because gross elements are the five gross elements, earth, water, fire and all that. Then you go in subtler into sense perceptions and then the more subtlest is the mind and intellect, etc.
And what were the first three? You said intellect. Intellect, it's the first three you said was intellect.
Intellect, ego and the mind.
Okay.
Okay. Then this one is the number 33. It's a very well-known sutra. Because this really tells us how to interact with people at a social level. So it's a very, very popular sutra. Okay, so again, we want to repeat the Sanskrit after me. Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, Upekshanam, Punya, Sukha, Dukha, Punya, Apunya, Vishayanam, Bhavanataha, Chitta, Prasadanam. All right, we're going to repeat that one more time. Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, Upekshanam, Sukha, Dukha, Punya, Apunya, Vishayanam, Bhavanataha, Chitta Prasadanam. Okay, that's a mouthful, but it's a very beautiful sutra, and it's very often quoted by a lot of people, because this really tells us how to, what kind of attitudes we should have to deal with people. So what it says is that it basically puts people in four different categories, okay? And those four categories are sukha, dukha, punya, apunya. What does that mean now? Sukh means people who are naturally happy, you know, they feel good about themselves, that's sukha. Dukha means people who are generally unhappy, miserable, and you know all these categories of people. You know. Okay, and then punya means people who are doing benevolent deeds, good deeds, positive deeds, that's punya. Or punya is the opposite, people who are doing bad deeds, okay, not good deeds, etc. All right.
What I have difficulty is disregard toward the wicked, especially if they're family.
Yeah, I know.
That's a tough one I have.
Yeah, you're right.
Unfortunately, I have that in my family.
Everyone does.
But you really do want to disregard them, but it's very difficult to disregard.
See, the word used is, let's go through this, you know, I will tell you. So what it's saying is, basically it says Maitri. Maitri is friendliness. Friendliness toward the people who are happy. Mm-hmm. And Karuna is compassion. Mm-hmm. Compassion, you know, that empathy, etc. for the people who are miserable, who have some kind of suffering. And then Mudita is a sense of delight. You know, you're really delighted at somebody who's doing good deeds, who's doing benevolent deeds. And then Upeksha. Upeksha it comes from Iksha. Iksha means to see. Iksha is to see. Upa means when you oversee something, overlook something. Okay, what it means is that you're engaged and yet you're able to go over that. Okay? Now, disregard is not a good translation. That's why I'm not very happy with that translation. That's coming from Swami Sachidananda. Not even sure what's... Ignore is a useful word, I think. Yeah,
it's hard to do.
It's hard to do because you're not when you're involved. And Gail's example is a family member. When you cannot ignore a family member. Yeah. Okay, so upeksha. You have to look at the real meaning of this word. Up means to go over something. Up. That's the prefix. Iksha means to see. So that becomes upeksha. That means you are engaged and you have to be able to kind of fly over it, sort of, skim over it.
But how do you really do that?
That comes with meditation. Because meditation will tell you how to draw the line between the ego and the intellect. Through the process of meditation, Your mind is, you know, your stuff is getting cleared out. All that garbage is in the mind is getting cleared out.
Okay.
And then ego is trying to pull that stuff that is called garbage out, mm-hmm. and then based on that make decisions. Intellect knows how not to get to that. So it's the ability to make the intellect sharper compared to the ego. Therefore, it knows how not to get involved with the dirty stuff.
It's non-attachment.
Non-attachment. So you do stuff from non-attachment, not getting involved, not getting judgmental and attached. Non-attachment. It's hard.
I can do it for a while, but then I lose. I can't. You know, you can be above someone's wickedness for a while. You know, it's okay. But then, it just after a while, it's so exhausting.
Yeah, so...
Ignore? It's even exhausting to ignore somebody that's, you know, wicked. I have some wicked family.
It's hard. It's
I
not
mean,
easy.
If someone is not being a positive influence in our life, mm-hmm. I think it's from Yoga Sutra, it's eliminating neti, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
yeah.
For me, neti is, I'm sure like we all have that, sometimes in family, sometimes at work.
Yeah.
So it is hard. I try and sometimes go vent it to maybe somebody, my mentor or someone
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
But by and large, knowing that I am ignoring just the action of the person, but not the person
mm-hmm.
himself or herself, just disassociating the action from the person that's doing has helped me to some extent. And then also thinking that everyone is at a different level, that doesn't mean that I'm like, you know, at a higher level though.
Mm-hmm.
But at least that I try to think about it that way. And we are all in our own circles of evolution and just stay away from that negative influence.
That's a good one. That's a good one. You know, isolating the action from the actor, you know, that's hard to do, but that's what we
do.
That's what we need to do. That's a good point, though.
Yeah, if you isolate the action from the actor, then you have overlooked.
Then you have overlooked it, yes. Indifference is another word people use for this upeksha, indifference. But sometimes indifference also has a negative connotation.
Yeah. Then you get in trouble.
So it's not indifference, really. You know, to me... I know the word upeksha. I don't want to translate that. You know, I know what upeksha means. You know, I just want to leave it at that because any translation is going to add something to it which is not quite accurate. Sometimes these Sanskrit words are not easy to translate. You know, it's very hard. So you'll see all these different translations of these words. But this is a very beautiful sutra. It gives us a good guideline as to how to deal with people of different types, different, you know, of different nature, etc. And it becomes a very nice guide for living a life which is peaceful. Prasad. Chitta prasadanam means the mind becomes very peaceful and calm. Prasadanam. You know, I have a friend of mine, he has developed a full presentation on this sutra. And, if you go to my blog, I have a copy of his presentation. He actually gave a talk on this sutra. And I have an audio recording as well as his PowerPoint presentation. He's an engineer, so he likes PowerPoint presentations. Okay, and he has made a very, very beautiful, effective PowerPoint presentation. You know, he has made four different quadrants and different categories of people and which quadrant is what where and, you know, put dots everywhere. And he's explained it very beautifully. And I urge you to go through his presentation to get a deeper understanding.
What's the name of it on your blog? How would we find it on your blog?
You can search for Sutra 1.33, maybe.
Okay.
That might help.
That sutra. Right.
Because he has given this whole 1 hour presentation only on the sutra.
So that's like an extrapolation of this.
Yeah, no, he's just describing this whole concept in a social context. He likes to do these things. You know, he likes to develop his theme based on some aspect that he likes, and then, being an engineer, he builds a nice PowerPoint presentation with charts and figures and all that. But it's a good presentation. You would enjoy that. Okay, so this is where I finished chapter 1, essentially. There are many more sutras in chapter 1. Like I said, I will go through them under different topics. All right. All the Ishvara part I will do with the 8 limbs of yoga. And then I have a special segment on meditation. Again, as a part of the 8 limbs of yoga, so I'll do all the remaining sutras in chapter 1, which is a part of the meditation part. So we'll go through them generally. Essentially, we cover most of chapter 1 and 2. I skip a few sutras which, you know, to me, not as significant maybe. And then I go through the first 8 or 10 sutras in chapter 3. That's it. That's what we've been covering so far. Chapter 1, 2, and very small subset of chapter 3. And then chapter 3 and 4, you know, I don't cover. So far, I'm not very comfortable with them myself, so I don't cover them. Okay, so let's switch to the so the next topic is the 8 limbs of yoga. I think most people are somewhat familiar with these 8 limbs of yoga, and we jump to that before we do the other parts. Because what Patanjali talks about in some of the chapter 1 and 2 is that, look, we have suffering, we have all these 3 types of suffering, and we go through mental agitation, we go through all the fluctuations of the mind, and we need to calm the mind eventually. And to do that, we have to sharpen the intellect. Okay? And sharpen the intellect as well as diminish the influence of the... Oh, this is the same book?
Yeah, it's the same book. It's just a mini version. A mini version.
Really?
Yeah.
Is the whole thing?
Yeah, the whole thing. It's just what it doesn't do is all the explanation. It just does each sutra. And there might be a small explanation.
Oh, I see. Yeah. It doesn't do the whole explanation.
Not the whole explanation. But just a little... It's my travel book.
That's good.
But I need a big one like that.
Explains it all.
Yeah, this book, you know, you can get it from half.com for about $2, $3, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If you go to half.com.
Half.com?
Yeah, it's.
Hmm? I think they closed.
Oh, they are?
I think so. Oh, yeah? I think they merged with eBay, and they're directing everybody to eBay now.
Oh, I see.
eBay bought them.
I see.
I love half.com.
I used to get a lot of books from half.com.
I think they're forcing everybody to go to eBay now.
I see.
Yeah, it was, but it was like $3 or something per book or something.
Well, you know, I got for a couple of my friends, I got this book, and the cost of the book was 75 cents.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then $3 for shipping. So for $3.75, I got 2 copies at that time, because one of my friends, you know, some of them wanted it. They were used, but that's perfectly okay. And when I received them, there was hardly anything I found which was used.
Great. 228
we're going to
be on?
Yes, we're going to start with it. So I was just going to give you some background. So, in chapter 2, Patanjali goes through the topic of klesha, which is roughly translated as the stress that we go through. So he talks about this kleshas and then what causes kleshas, and obviously he talks about ego and all that. And then he goes on to talk about the karma theory, reincarnation, you know, how different births take place and all that. And eventually he says that you have to cleanse the mind and sharpen the intellect and make your intuition much more powerful than what it is now. Right now, intuition is kind of hidden behind our ego. And we want to sharpen the intuition so we can work from that side, not from the ego side. And that's where he introduces this concept of 8 limbs of yoga. Okay? So this is the sutra that's introducing us to the 8 limbs of yoga. Okay? So the sutra is, again, we want to read the Sanskrit first. Yogang anushthanat ashuddhi kshaye jnana Deeptihi, A Vivek Khyatehe. Alright, you get that? Okay. Yogang, let's all repeat it one more time. It's a very beautiful sutra and I really want you to kind of listen to the words. Yogang Anushthanat Ashuddhikshaye Jnana Deeptihi Avivek Khyate He. All right. What do these individual words mean, first of all? Yoganga. Yoga, Anga. Anga is the limbs. Yoganga means the limbs of yoga. Anushthanat. Anushthana is the very careful practice. Abhyasa is practice. Anushthana means very careful, very dedicated practice. That's anushthana. Okay? So by the very dedicated and careful practice of the 8 limbs of yoga, what do you get? Ashuddhi kshaye. Ashuddhi means?
Impurities.
And kshaye means on the diminishing of the impurities. So the first thing that happens is when you start practicing these limbs of yoga, your impurities begin to diminish. And what are we talking about as impurities?
Non-violence.
Stuff. You know, in general, they talk about, first of all, they say we have these 6 negative tendencies which are called impurities. Everyone knows that? They're, in Sanskrit, the names are Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, Matsarya. Good. They're always mentioned in our texts. So, Kama is lust, craving, lustful craving, so to say. Kama is lustful craving for stuff, cup of coffee included. Okay? Then Krodha is anger, Lobha is greed. Moha is delusion, not knowing the reality or believing in non-reality. That's moha. Mada is arrogance, pride. Okay? And matsarya is jealousy. So these are 6 mentioned as the enemies of the mind or 6 most dangerous impurities of the mind. But then we have all kinds of other impurities. We have stuff going on all the time, negative stuff. Right? We have depression, we have anxieties, we have guilt feelings and all kinds of stuff, different things. Okay? So, we have to purify the mind of all that. All that is happening in our samskaras, in our past impressions. And the whole purpose of yoga is to make those impressions less effective. The less effective they are, the ego has less to do then, because ego depends on all this. You know, ego pulls up stuff and it says, ah, I should get angry now. It pulls up some stuff. Ah, I should get jealous now. That's what it does. So that's what the ego does. But if that stuff is not there or it is deep down, ego is not able to pull it up very easily. Then things are okay. Okay, so ashuddhi kshaye, that's the number one requirement, that we want to start cleansing the mind of all the impurities. And then what happens when the impurities begin to dwindle down? Jnana deeptihi. Jnana means? What's jnana?
Knowledge.
Knowledge, pure knowledge, the true knowledge, not bookish knowledge. And deepti means?
Light.
So, when the impurities have diminished, then we are able to see the light at the end of the tunnel, so to say. That jnana, that pure intuitive wisdom, that knowledge begins to shine through. It was hidden by the ego up to this point. There was a big cover, there was a big curtain on top of that. But now that curtain is getting removed slowly because of the impurities are gone. There's more clarity. Therefore, now we are able to see this light of wisdom that's coming from pure intuition. It's called the intuitive wisdom. We all have that, but we don't have access to it. It's covered. So, jnana deeptihi, that shines through. When that happens, aviveka khyatehe. We said viveka is the pure discriminatory knowledge or discriminatory wisdom. Okay? And that wisdom is the one which leads to self-realization. Finally.
Can you please repeat the last sentence?
Aviveka khyatehe. Viveka is discriminatory wisdom. When we get that discriminatory wisdom, then I am able to realize my true identity and therefore I am self-realized. So therefore, what the statement says is that by the practice of these eight limbs of yoga, the impurities will go down. When the impurities go down, I am able to see the light of pure intuition. And when that happens, I am able to realize myself. So I become self-realized because my discriminatory power has become very sharp now. So that's the promise of yoga. Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, that's what it is promising. That you will become self-realized. Okay, so this is a very beautiful introductory sutra to the Yoga Sutras, or to the eight limbs of yoga. I consider this as a very important sutra, it's very pregnant with a lot of deep meaning, as you can see. It's a real gist of all the benefits that you attain through the practice of yoga. Beautiful. So physical, all the impurities, what I've mentioned is, physical impurities are like sickness, etc., which were given in Sutra 130 that we talked about, nine kinds of sickness, and then four accompaniments. Those are all impurities, right? And then it says, mental impurities are the kleshas. Remember, we talked about, I briefly mentioned there are five kleshas, and we'll be coming back to that. Okay, sometimes I feel that I should talk about kleshas first before we go into the... But now that I have it in this, you know, we'll stay with this. It's okay. And then I mentioned the six enemies. Those lustful cravings, anger, etc., those are listed here. And jnana deepti is glow of pure, innate, intuitive wisdom, uncorrupted by the ego. And viveka khyati is the discrimination between real and unreal, self-realization. So we talked about all that. All right. So then it goes into the listing of these eight limbs of yoga. Most of you know this already. So anyway, just let's repeat that. Yama. Niyama.
Niyama.
Asana.
Asana.
Pranayama.
Pranayama.
Pratyahara.
Dharana.
Dharana.
Dhyana.
Samadhi.
Samadhi.
So these are the eight limbs of the yoga. Oh, then finally it says, Dhyana Samadhayo Ashtavangani. Ashtavangani. Ashta means eight, Angani means eight limbs. So these are the eight limbs of yoga. That's what all he's saying, he's listing these eight limbs of yoga. Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi. Okay.